Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
That was supposed to be happy birthday to you, Mark.
I'm waiting. I'm waiting for a happy birthday. What the heck happened?
I got to say, my finger had just slipped out. It's the wrong button.
That's the new form of happy birthday.
Yeah.
Come on, baby, light my candles on my birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
Well, is it your birthday?
You know, my birthday's in May.
My birthday's in February.
Then why are we saying happy birthday?
You know, I haven't a clue. Actually, I do have a clue, but it would make better radio if I say I haven't a clue.
Well, thanks for making better radio then.
Thank you for starting off with such a rousing, energized song.
There was a... Hey, well, that's it. This is the moment that people live for the live show. You know what I mean? It's like NASCAR. They wait, they hope for the crash. And, guess what? They got it.
Yeah. And actually, I was so totally caught off guard. I'm looking for a sound effect that I don't have. How about this?
Yeah. That really makes a difference.
Yeah. I was looking for the snoring one. I don't have that up here. What's with that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
You know, there's a thing that says plan your work and work your plan.
Yeah.
Well, we planned our work, but you're not working the plan.
I'm sorry. I totally failed at that one.
So,
but that's all right.
Let's let the audience in on what we're even talking about.
We'll start this one over.
Yeah.
But it was a, there we go.
There we go.
That's what I had. But anyway, it is Simple Flight Aviation Radio's 1 year birthday.
Happy birthday, Simple Flight Radio.
Yes.
Now actually, next week is my 1 year anniversary with it because you did the first show by yourself.
Exactly.
From Oshkosh.
What an awkward moment that was.
Yeah. But I have to admit, I didn't listen. I didn't know about it.
Yeah, it didn't listen. It was just kind of a trial. I didn't tell many people about it until the next day I was at Oshkosh and somebody saw, hey, you're the guy that was broadcasting live on Twitter. And,
on Twitter,
I was tweeting and trying to figure out how to do all this stuff and manage it. You know, I knew it wasn't going to be great, but it was fun. And, people were listening, believe it or not, and people still listen today.
It's amazing. So that, you know, it's kind of like, I used to coach basketball for fun, and people say, I want to start the game, and I said, no, you don't. You want to be finished the game, because that means you're important to the team.
Yeah.
Right? So similarly, when you start a radio show, it's okay that your people listen that first time. It's more important that they're listening still today, 1 year later.
Exactly. Otherwise, it'd just be weird. You know, we'd end up having a show, I guess, shooting blanks, if you will.
Careful.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. But hey, one of these traditions, the next week's show is going to represent the 1 year birthday for something that's developed its own hashtag.
Uh-oh.
Do you know what that is?
SNC?
Yes!
Sierra November Charlie.
Sierra November Chuck.
Chuck, yeah. but we haven't even, we've been talking, we got off on this funky foot, we'll call it. You're Al Waterloo.
I'm Al Waterloo.
I'm Mark Eppner.
Mark Eppner.
Simple Flight Live Aviation Radio.
And happy birthday, Simple Flight. Happy Oshkosh, everyone.
Yes. And we are broadcasting live, not from Oshkosh, although maybe, well, next week we can't either. But, we are from Papawhiskie Kilo, formerly Palwaukee Airport in Chicago, and currently Chicago Executive Airport.
Exactly.
Live from the Ledge, Leading Edge Aviation, or Leading Edge Flying Club's little pilot cave they have here on the second floor of Hangar 5, overlooking a beautiful Chicago evening, a little brisk.
little brisk. It's you can see definitely that autumnal sun is going, and there's a Learjet pulling out to take off on
aviation,
runway 3-4.
ADD.
Yeah.
Squirrel.
But hey, you know, how could you miss a shiny red and white Learjet?
You can't.
You seriously can't.
You know, I was talking to somebody. We were going through our hangar here. If I wasn't so embarrassed about the current state of our website, we're going to get our website designed. But at leadingedgeflyingclub.com, there is two webcams.
Yes.
That you can see inside the community hangar or outside on the ramp. And inside the community hangar, there's an aircraft with a 1901W. It used to be a Whirlpool number. It isn't anymore. And that thing, and it was on a Gulfstream. Now it's, I don't even recognize it. The airplanes have changed so much, but it's got like 1 hour on that airplane.
Yeah.
It still has the popcorn packing material around it.
It's a beautiful airplane, isn't it?
Yeah. So what is it?
That is Walgreens corporate jet.
Yeah, but you know what
the tail number represents?
No, what the
what kind of airplane it is? It's a Challenger 300.
No, it's not a Challenger, is it?
Yeah, absolutely, Challenger 300.
Oh, it doesn't say that.
Beautiful airplane, 1901W, I think, which is the year Walgreens first started, isn't it? I believe it is.
Yeah, Al, that's it.
Yeah, 1901 whiskey.
So
1901 whiskey.
Yeah, and it used to like say Whirlpool.
I could get used to that call sign.
01 whiskey. Actually, my favorite is a single syllable of the last three.
Yeah.
A double syllable and then a single syllable. So
example.
One Papa Golf.
One Papa
it
Golf.
It just flows. Papa. It rolls off the tongue. And I think our loyal listeners have known back in the 70s I worked at Iowa City Flying Service, and all of our planes were one Charlie Foxtrot, Iowa City Flying.
Yeah.
And so, but we didn't say Foxtrot. It was so cool. I used to go, one Charlie Fox.
One Charlie Fox. One Mike Fox.
One Charlie Fox. Now you gotta have two syllables before that last single. So not one Mike Fox, one Charlie Fox.
Yeah.
And sometimes we drop the one. They go, turn right heading 270. Right, 270. Charlie Fox.
Yeah. I like it. So what, if you had a tail number now, what's your dream? What would you put on your tail number?
Boy, I don't know. I'm so attuned to one Charlie Fox or one Papa Golf. We have a Cirrus on the field here.
I love that. I do love that call sign.
One Papa Golf. It's a perfect one. You know, you can get it out. We have a Niner Romeo. We just got ahead. We're getting the tweets.
I don't know if the tweets
are coming in. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Who tweeted that?
What?
Who tweeted that?
Actually, not a tweet. It's an instant or text message.
Oh, man. Who texted you?
Happy birthday.
All right. Excellent. Thanks.
And let's see. What was – so where was I going? There goes my senior
moment. What's your favorite? We have one Romeo or whatever.
Oh, it was Niner Romeo. How can you get that?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that doesn't come from the FAA. Someone wants that. You can't say that.
Right.
No. Actually, probably not legit, but, you know, I was flying our little Italian-made Sky Arrow yesterday. I love that because it's just four digits. There's no letters. 1078. And so whenever they gave me a thing, I go, you know, I say, you know, clear to take off runway 34, 1078.
I love that. That's a nice call sign. It's really 1078. Nice. 1079. That doesn't 1077.
1078. No,
you got to have the 8.
10. Then the multi, so a single syllable, multi-syllabic, and then a single syllable.
Exactly. I was actually thinking about this other day, and like doing call signs and stuff like that. And, you know, usually a lot of people, whenever I go up to Cirrus, they always ask, like on the delivery, oh, what's the tail number mean? You know, that's like, and then the person always has a great story behind it and all that. And usually it's somebody's initial or something like
our
that.
Our birthday.
Birthday and initial, or the day they sold their company, which allowed them to buy the Cirrus and their initial, something like that. And I was like, well, what would my tail number be? And I thought it would be 522. It's either Alpha Whiskey or Quebec Whiskey or Whiskey Quebec. What do you like?
Well, again, you got to get the syllables right. And Alpha Whiskey is Alpha that's Whiskey. Four right there before you put the
Whiskey
third
one. Quebec. I kind of like that. WQ.
No, what was it? Alpha?
Alpha Whiskey, Alpha Quebec, or Quebec Whiskey, or Whiskey Quebec?
I'd go with the Alpha Whiskey if I had to choose.
Alpha Whiskey?
Yeah. I guess it's nice just to say the word whiskey.
Yeah, Whiskey Quebec. I think I would do that, WQ.
And what? Where does that come from?
My last name, Waterloo, and my middle initial, Q.
Quentin?
Quinn.
Quinn.
Yeah.
You're not a
so
Quinn.
So you'd be Mark L. Yeah.
I'd be Emily. Emily. No, I'd be Mike Echo. Mike Echo. Mike Echo, me.
Me.
Yeah, that's all right. But again, I would do Echo at Mike.
Yeah.
You gotta have the second and then the one syllable.
Yeah,
true. You have to put the emphasis on the right syllable.
Right. That's funny. Was that the Sunday night chuckle?
No, that's not the Sunday. You know what? I actually have a pretty good Sunday night chuckle, and I'm gonna save it.
You're gonna save it?
Yeah. I'm gonna save it till next week. So this, I just want to do it short and sweet and move on, okay?
All right.
I don't know. This, sometimes Sunday night chuckles that maybe you did in your younger years.
Yeah.
And they kind of come to you when you're
right
in the shower or something. Like, oh, that's kind of, I remember that. I used to laugh at that when I was 8 years old.
Right.
And then you think, I wonder if people would understand if that would fly here. So this is not an aviation joke, but
is it a birthday one?
No.
No.
But it is an old joke, and it's just what a kid would say. But I thought it made me smile, so I thought I would share it with you tonight.
All right. Please do.
All right. I got it. It's not that funny, people. Yeah. Why did the pervert cross the road?
Oh, God. I don't know. To go to jail?
No. He was stuck to the chicken. See?
Yeah.
All right.
For some reason, I don't think there would be necessarily a golf clap after that.
What's this? Anyway. Actually, that's funny to say that. I was had the pleasure of babysitting my granddaughter this week. I still love saying granddaughter, even though I don't feel like a grandfather.
Uh-huh.
And my son and daughter-in-law, they taught their daughter. She's like 15 months old. There's big clap.
Yes.
And then there's golf clap.
Golf clap.
Golf clap. Big yes. clap, golf clap.
Quiet clap.
Shh. It's a nice
spot. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There was a, and then there's also a slow clap. Me and Travis.
Oh yeah, they did that movie.
Yeah, the slow clap, and that was a, that was pretty, that's pretty, hey, you finally made, I just got a tweet in from a regular listener, and you made him laugh for the first time.
What?
On the Sunday Night Chuckle. Congratulations, what a great birthday present.
That is a great birthday. I'm very pleased, but how could that be? I've had some, he or she has not listened to all of them. Because I've had some pretty funny Sunday Night Chuckles. At least if you're the judge.
So he's a pretty tough cookie, right, as we all know.
Oh, is it Alpha Kilo?
Yes, it is.
All right. Yeah. That, you know what? That explains that everything. If you know that Mr. Alpha Kilo.
Yes.
That's his type of joke.
Yep, it is. It sure is. It sure is. Well, you finally did it. You nailed it.
Yay! Woohoo!
You nailed it. But, hey, I got something important that I wanted to talk about. So there's, you know, last year I went up to Oshkosh, and it was my mom just tweeted.
Oh, no.
Yuck.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Waterloo. Yes. I forgot she would be on.
Yes. So, well, that's all right. But, anyway, getting back to the issue at hand, last year we went up to Oshkosh, and there's this kind of theme that was buzzing around, and I think you go up to a booth and you talk to the salesperson.
Right.
Or whoever was working the booth and said, hey, you know, the numbers are down. We got to get more people flying and things like that. And, you know, this year, I think Oshkosh has got a little bit different tune. We get under new management, if you will. And, people are really excited and really trying to push aviation.
Right.
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 And I got a question to you. How would you push aviation? How can aviation get better? How can it grow?
Well, and we've talked about this a lot, and certainly, Mark Eppner, while I may have all the answers, it'd be unfair to share them just on this radio show. No, seriously. I don't know where that came from.
Wow.
If I'm a little silly guy. Yeah, I want to go flying. Look at that. It's just beautiful out there.
Squirrel.
Yeah. So, I talk to people all the time about aviation, whether they like it or not. And when I talk to other pilots, they always talk about, we got to get the young guy in here. We've got to get the successful businessman in here. And everything is like around picking the right age when
right.
someone either has a career to build in front of them or they've made money in their career and now they have some disposable income.
Right.
You know, it hit me. I think that may be part of it, but they're focused on age, and I don't think it's age. I think there's a tremendous growth opportunity. You ready? You sitting down?
Yes.
All right. You might want to write this down.
All right.
Gender.
Gender?
Yeah. Let gender be that. I had a gentleman come into our flying club on Friday.
Yeah.
Loved it and all that. And he kept on talking about brand new series. I don't know if you've seen it. It's out here on the ramp sometimes. Brand new 2013 Cirrus Turbo,
yeah.
5-seat, 3,600 pounds.
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, that's my wife's plane. And I said, well, isn't it you and your wife's plane? He says, no, she's a very successful business person, and she deserves the credit. She bought it. And I'm her spouse. I get to fly it, but it's her airplane.
Right.
And then he said, and how many women do you have in your club? And I said, let's see, there's one, there's two. And I couldn't go past two. And we've had maybe four over, I think, out of like some 70, 75 people.
Right.
And I said, man, that's just wrong.
It's low.
Of course it's low. It's non-existent. Four doesn't count. Two doesn't count. And it made me realize how many, qualified candidates, I'll call them, are out there that are in a gender that doesn't fly that much.
Right.
And they should. And there's a lot of, I mean, we have, you know, flying the airplane I previously mentioned. There's a CEO of a company flying that, and she's,
right.
You know, she's the kind of person there are a lot of, these successful women that are entrepreneurial, adventurous, doing business. They have to go places. That's where I think there's some growth.
Right, right, exactly. There is a, I really think that you have a point with that. And, you know, there's some really valid efforts out there right now. I think Amelia Earhart is actually trying to, you know, start a little, a revolution for women pilots out in the Denver area. And I think she started the Fly with Amelia Foundation. But, you know, I look at a lot of my friends who I went to school with and things like that. They're very successful airline pilots and things like that. No, but I think I think there's a lot of, and I'd be curious to see the gender mix on this, but, I don't think it's not, women don't exist in aviation. I think that they do. Maybe not necessarily entirely in the flying part, but look at the number of controllers that are women.
Well, and I that might be more as of late, but you're right.
Yeah.
I just say the numbers are smaller than they should be.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right? It's not that there's no, they're non-existent, but there's an opportunity there.
Right.
And, I would think there's an opportunity. And if Amelia Earhart out of Denver there has got something going, and there's certainly the 99s, although that's an old, more my generation group, women with wings, lady tail draggers or something with tail draggers that, with women. So there are groups out there, but again, I'm just saying there's an opportunity for more.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, I think that I totally agree, and it can only be better, and, you know, I think that'd be a lot of fun.
What would be a lot of fun?
Oh, just growing aviation and, you know, yeah. And having a, I think the you know, women in aviation would really like, there's a, actually that's a big national organization, Women in Aviation. Have you heard of them?
No, WEA?
Yeah, WEA.
WEA!
Yeah. Yeah, so Women in Aviation.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. I mentioned the other groups, too, beyond 99s that exist, that they're there, but just not to the extent they should be.
Right. So here's a question. I'm a member of Women in Aviation, believe it or not. It's
that explains what I saw in your closet.
No, honestly, I actually have been since college. I've gone to a couple of their
way to meet women.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? You know what's funny is that I had a in college. I went to one of their big national job fairs and conventions and stuff like that.
BNJF.
Yep, exactly. And it was pretty fun. I mean, it was a lot of fun and. I guess as funny as it sounds, you know, a lot of people, it turned out to, I got a job out of it because, you know, I was like one of the only guys there. So I got stuck out like a sore thumb. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of benefits to the organization, but they do really push women in aviation and really try to advance.
I'm still sitting here trying to think through So they obviously have both genders.
Yeah. Oh,
it.
Yeah, definitely.
But
definitely.
You, like you say, you stuck out like a sore thumb. What was like?
Because I was a guy amongst all these women. And
that's what I think. So that, what are they thinking? Why? If I'm them, I'm thinking, okay, he's either here to pick up women or to wear our clothes. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, no. I mean, it turned out to be nice, but they actually every year they give out scholarships, and I'm in the works of applying for a couple of them, and I just wonder what my odds of getting a scholarship would be. Not being a woman, but
and
winning a women in
age. Yeah, I would think your odds are nil.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's interesting. They say it's open to all women in aviation members, which I am a member, and all that. Yeah. And I don't know.
I'd love to join as many aviation groups as I can as well, and especially you're supporting them with financially. But you shouldn't be able to win it, even though you're a member. I guess I wonder if they have to say that, or if they truly would. I just think they're there to promote women in aviation, so to give a scholarship to a guy, I wouldn't think is within their mission or charter or something. I don't know,
but I'm going to certainly give a shot or give a try at it.
Yeah,
why not?
I mean, if they got it and you can take advantage of it, you know, yay.
Yeah.
Yippee for you.
I hope so. But yeah. I think that there would be an element. I wouldn't do it just to prove a point. I'm legitimately doing it because I think I would have a fair shot at it. And, other than the whole gender issue, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. No, good luck.
Thanks.
Yeah, let me know. Let me know when they have that next convention. I'd like to go with
it. Yeah, sure.
Where's the convention?
Where's Mark? I could turn that into a Sunday night chuckle.
Yeah.
No, just kidding.
Let's not do that. Yeah, as long as there's no chicken in it.
But anyway, hey, we speaking about people that have kind of been entrepreneurs in aviation, we have an incredible guest on our show this evening.
I've met our guest before. Actually,
yes.
I met him a few times.
Yes, yeah. So have I. And I the more I do, you know, you Google his name, you start to pull up his long list of impressive resume and very, very awesome and kind of inspirational guest this evening.
Yeah, it's kind of like our own little Shark Tank. Only he's the Mark Cuban or something on that side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so we're going to be talking in just a second with Jamal Arkin.
Yep.
And, you know, when you think about some of the things he did, and we'll talk with him about it, but when he was 14, you know, he wanted to solo an airplane. And guess what? What do the FAR say about soloing at 14?
You can't. You just can't do it.
And so he went and tried to get a waiver for that.
Wow.
Right. And the government said, So then what does he do? Then he starts petitioning companies to sponsor him into Canada, because in Canada you could, although he became the first to solo at the age of 14 over Canadian soil.
Nice.
Yeah. And then he does it again and he turns 16 here. I mean, he loves flying, so he's
right.
Perfect for this show.
Totally.
So
So why don't you dial him up, Mr. Jamal Arkin,
Larkins
of Ascension Air.
Yep.
And Ascension Air is not it's a pretty impressive company, but it's not his only credential on his resume. And for being just a year older than me, I'm
a failure.
I know. I feel I've.
Of course, he's like 30 years younger than me, so I'm a real failure. Let's get Jamal on the phone here.
Exactly. This would be great time.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingies. He's probably listening live now. He's waiting for 30 seconds for it to delay. But no, what a great guy. He's impacting aviation in a very positive way. And so we're excited to talk to him. And welcome to the show now, Jamal Arkins. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you doing, Mark?
I am doing wonderfully because I get to spend Sunday night talking about airplanes and getting to talk to you.
Well, I greatly appreciate the invite.
Yeah, our pleasure. And so, yeah, obviously Al's here as well, who you've talked to in the past.
Yes.
Hello, Al.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for coming on. I think this will be very exciting and a lot of fun to have you with us tonight.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, well, one of the things that Al and I constantly talk about is the entrepreneurial spirit that's available in aviation. And when we started the show 1 year ago today, it was kind of a not a downer, but aviation was always on the negative side of the news. We got to get more pilots. We got to do this. We got to advance this part of the community. And yet you, since what, to the late 90s, 2000, have been making very positive impact on the industry.
Well, I really appreciate that. I've, to be honest, part of it has been at the right place at the right time type situation, but I have been really blessed and thankful for the opportunities that I've had inside of the aviation industry and try to do what I could to try to give back to the industry that's given me a little bit. So,
yeah, so why don't you share with our listeners, you know, how this all started? I don't know if you were listening, but I just mentioned your petition to try and solo in the U.S. at 14 and ended up having to find two sponsors. I think it was Cirrus and one other that sent you over to Canada to get you to solo, right?
Yes, so there's a few more than two, but ultimately when I was 14 years old, it boiled down that I wanted to learn how to fly. After flying for about a year, I realized that I was paying a lot of money cumulatively, if you added it all up, to pay for a flight instructor to go flying with me, and I really didn't need it after a year of taking consistent flying lessons. And realized that if I was going to have to do that for the next 3 years, it was definitely going to add up. And that money I would much rather spend on paying for renting an airplane versus paying for a flight instructor basically babysit me. So I thought that that would be a bright idea, that if I petitioned the FAA to try to get an exemption to fly solo before my 16th birthday, it would help me save some funds and it allowed me to be able to spend a little bit more money on actually building up some flight time versus just getting the opportunity to pay for that babysitter, like I said. But during the petitioning process, I found out in Canada you only have to be 14 to fly solo up there. And then I got the bright idea that maybe, since the FAA was being a little bit hesitant about it, if I flew to a different country and got my student pilot's license there, soloed a powered airplane, that they would see that I was serious about it. I had already done it before. And maybe they might be willing to grant that exemption. So I wrote about 100 different aviation companies asking if they would sponsor that trip. And fortunately, a few of them said yes, and a few that said yes gave me the funds I needed to be able to go up to Canada and fly solo up there.
And how long did that take once you got there in terms of an instructor willing to sign you off for solo flight?
It took about 10 days.
Wow.
And the biggest issue wasn't necessarily the flight time or getting a chance to actually fly with an instructor. The biggest issue was really getting the paperwork back from Canada, because I had to get my student pilot's license and my medical. And there, at the time, wasn't as the same process as what it is here inside of the United States. So it took you had to actually get a document back from Transport Canada that, like, your flight instructor couldn't quite give it to you here in the U.S.
Huh. And then in terms of those 10 days, was there, does that represent 10 hours or what, how many hours did you spend in aircraft with an instructor again before the solo flight up there?
To be honest, I don't remember the exact flight time, but I would imagine that it was probably less than 10 hours for sure that I spent flying with a flight instructor before I got soloed or signed off to fly solo. After that happened, I stayed up for another week up in Canada and just flew around the country.
That's awesome. Which
was quite an amazing experience. You know, growing up in the South here, in Georgia primarily, Georgia and Florida, nice flying weather sometimes, but definitely during the summertime, it can be extremely hazy. Barely VFR from that standpoint. But in Canada, the visibility was just absolutely amazing during the summertime. So to be able to see kind of that part of the country or that part of the world per se from a different perspective was really cool.
So then after the additional week of flying solo, now you come back to the United States. You're not legal to fly solo, right?
That is correct. So that happened. I went up to Canada July 4th of 1998, came back about July 18th of 98, and then I had about a week or so before AirVenture started in Oshkosh. Went up to Oshkosh, had the opportunity to actually meet with the Secretary of Transportation and FAA Administrator that year. And explain what had just happened, that I had already been petitioning the FAA for over a year, tried to get an exemption to fly solo before my 16th birthday, and basically was told that they were very impressed with what had happened. However, it was extremely unlikely that my request would be granted, primarily because of the political pressures that the FAA was being put under after the Jessica Dubroff accident that happened, which was, I don't know if you remember, the young lady that was trying to set a world record for being the youngest person to fly across the country. And after that, Congress was putting out some very unique legislation that fortunately did not get passed, saying that, you know, anyone under the age of, I can't remember if it was 16 or 18, that did not have a pilot's license was not allowed to manipulate the controls of an airplane. And then some of the big aviation associations, CAA, AOPA, and a few others, really battled hard to explain that was overkill. And it would really hurt the industry if they actually did that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
were you part of any of the advocacy to prevent that from happening?
Not at that time. At that time, I was really, like I said, about 14, 15 years old at the time and really wasn't actively involved on that segment of the industry just yet.
Excellent. Well, hey, that sounds like a lot of fun. Did you end up, so when you went up to Canada, where was your kind of home base, if you will?
I stayed in Timmins, Ontario, Canada, and I was really fortunate that I had met a gentleman by the name of Mr. Lloyd Richards, who was one of the Young Eagles field representatives up in that area. And when I was up in Oshkosh a year earlier, and I had a brief conversation with him and explained what I was in the process of trying to do. And then that's when he told me that in Canada, you only have to be 14 to fly solo up there. And then so that's when I was 13, the idea, well, maybe if I do travel to a different country and get that student pilot's license, I would be able to have a better position for petitioning the FAA came from.
But ultimately, you had to wait for 16 here to solo and 17 for your license?
That is correct.
So you just decided to sell airplane jets in the meantime?
Well, that took a few years before that one started to happen, but something along those lines, yes.
That's how exciting. So tell us a little bit about your company, Ascension Air, or Ascension. I guess there's multiple divisions. Give us a little insight what the company's all about.
Sure. Well, after I was told that my exemption to lower my cost of flying wasn't going to happen, I had to start thinking outside of the box on how I could be able to afford to learn how to fly on my own. I didn't want to go to my parents and ask them for the money. I realized I couldn't get a full-time job while I was still in high school. But nothing said I couldn't start up my own company and hopefully make that a successful entity that would allow me to be able to pay for my flying. So when I was 15 years old, I had the opportunity to start selling flight training materials for Rob Machado and King Schools. And started a website, started selling pilot flight training materials online, and then about a year after doing that, started selling pilot supplies for Gulf Coast Avionics as well. And between that and a few other little things that I was doing, was able to kind of grow that and was able to purchase my first airplane, a Christian Eagle, my senior year of high school. Started flying air shows with that, and then over the years, when I was in college, I got the opportunity to actually start brokering airplanes, and that evolved into a company called Ascension Aircraft that, to this day, is still selling and leasing airplanes. Primarily, Cirrus is probably our largest volume product that we do. We sell a wide range of everything from small single-engine airplanes up to corporate jets as well. And then we did that for several years. And then some of our clients that we started selling turbine-powered airplanes to started to need some assistance on managing their airplanes. And we were doing that informally in the very beginning, which created some issues because we formally didn't have a structure that, you know, pilots needed to listen to what we were saying, and people started to think that we were kind of interfering with how they wanted to run their flight departments for their clients, but then our clients were still depending on us for our opinions on things. And then ultimately we decided that we wanted to start formally managing airplanes to be able to handle that in a better capacity. And so started managing airplanes with Ascension Aircraft. And then About 2 years ago, we decided to create a separate company. So the focus of Ascension Aircraft on the sales and leasing aspect, and then create a new company for management and fractional ownership for piston-powered airplanes. And that company became Ascension Air. And that's what we primarily do with Ascension Air today. We manage three turbine-powered airplanes and also have a fleet of five brand-new Cirrus SR-22Ts that are part of a fractional program that we recently launched here in the Atlanta area.
Wow.
That is terrific.
Well, just real quick going back, if you don't mind me rewinding back to your high school years. I mean, that's to me, that's like any aviator's dream to have a little aviation business and go back into that. I'm very curious because, you know, that sounds awesome. What was that like going through high school and being able to, you know, buy an airplane your senior year of high school? What was everybody's reaction?
it was definitely a little bit different than the fact that most people weren't, you know, flying airplanes in my high school. Only a couple of my other friends had any interest in airplanes whatsoever. But it wasn't something that came up a lot in school, to be honest. I didn't really talk about it at school. I had to take care of schoolwork, and then outside of that, I had friends and played sports, and then on top of that was flying. So it was just kind of one of those hobbies that I was involved with, but really didn't take up a large portion of my life during high school. So it wasn't really something that came up a lot, Al.
And your friends and teachers, they didn't really say much about your chauffeur-driven limousine outside waiting for you?
I wish that was the case. No, it definitely got around a little bit that, you know, I had started up a small little company that was doing okay for itself. But I think people also saw the amount of work that was involved in getting that off the ground as well. And then it was also no secret that most 15-year-olds, including myself at the time, did not have the expertise to really start up a company and learn all the nuances from a legal standpoint to a marketing standpoint on how to take care of growing a small business. So I had a lot of people in my life, kind of mentors, many of which I met at my local airport, that kind of took some time out of their day and schedule. And when I had questions about how to do certain things or what I needed to do, they were willing to take the time to kind of give me some advice that ended up being extremely helpful.
How wonderful. What a great story. I also want to rewind, you know, as Al said when he asked his questions, you mentioned flying air shows, right? So you actually flew in air shows.
Yes.
Do aerobatics?
I did. I started flying air shows. I became a certified air show performer when I was 18 years old and professionally flew air shows for 5 years, right until I graduated college. And then I started traveling a substantial amount after college. And there's just no way, with the travel schedule that I had, as well as trying to grow Ascension Aircraft, that I could effectively and safely, continue to fly air shows. So I had to let something go. And unfortunately, that was one of those things that had to go for a period of time. But I'm hoping that that part of my life does come back.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling if you want it to happen, it will happen.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think air shows need fresh blood at some point. You know, yeah. I think they have, I don't know, that's the kind of theme of the last couple of the shows and things like that, and how to make the air show better and attract new talent. But that's another topic.
That's another topic, yeah. So, you know, the fractional management company you recently launched and are being successful in the Atlanta area, I know that you have done some marketing and done some reach out here in Chicago, and I was a part of another fractional program that was originally based in Atlanta as well. And they had a tough time in Chicago, and I know you've got some interested parties, not enough to get it going yet. What do you think is different about Chicago that it just doesn't seem to, excuse the expression, doesn't seem to fly here? Or maybe it does. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not too sure that it won't fly there. I will say that the fractional market across the entire country for piston-powered / personally flown airplanes has not really flown anywhere. If you look at any of the major operators that have still been in existence, and let me start off by saying, some of the operators out there have done a phenomenal job. There's several of them that have been out there for over a decade that have provided a lower cost of aircraft ownership options for some of their owners. Now, are any of them perfect? No, even including ours for that matter. But we studied the market for over 2 years and trying to figure out what some of the problems were associated with personally flown fractionals. One of those is the cost of entry, I believe. One of them was a lack of a true partnership with aircraft manufacturers. And then the third one was just educating the market, which I think is the biggest issue. If you go out there and you look at the benefits of fractional ownership for the turbine-powered segment of the world, you'll see that the vast majority of people that get into aircraft ownership are getting in by one of those turbine-powered fractional programs now. That is not the case with piston-powered airplanes. But yet, some of the same principles that make those programs so effective turbine world definitely apply on the piston side. And if you talk to most general aviation pilots, I'll give you a great example. During the time frame that we were doing our market research here in Atlanta, we would go around and talk to general aviation pilots that were active inside the community here in Atlanta and ask them if they knew about, you know, personally flown fractionals, what the benefits were, what some of the cons were as well. And very few people could even give you any idea or comments about what the programs were, pros or cons, or even tell you who was involved with it in the Atlanta area. So that was really kind of disappointing and shocking, to be honest, that, you know, fractional ownership in Atlanta has been available for personally flown airplanes for over a decade. Mm-hmm. And we were talking to active pilots that have been around for a while and asking them, you know, what they thought about it. And most people couldn't even tell you any idea about it. So my biggest thing that I think is one of the main reasons why personally flown fractionals hasn't taken off as big is a lot of people don't fully understand the pros and cons of it. If you talk to people and say, okay, I can give you access to a brand new airplane for about the cost of owning a 20 or 30 year old airplane on your own, you're going to have 90% access to the airplane whenever you want it. And then on top of that, you're going to have a concierge service that every single time you show up to the airplane, the airplane is going to be spotless. It's going to be clean. Your navigation databases are going to be up to date. Anytime you have a maintenance issue, you just tell someone, hey, that there is an issue with the alternator or whatever. And the next time you show up at the airport, it's already been taken care of. And then on top of that, you're also going to have fixed maintenance operating costs. So you're not going to have those spikes that are typically associated with traditional aircraft ownership. Those are some pretty compelling arguments for most people. And if you sit down and go over the entire concept, a lot of people are pretty interested in it. It's getting the chance to get in front of people and fully explain that story that is the most difficult part.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny, and I mentioned I was part of a program that's no longer in Chicago. I liked it. We had multiple airplanes, so the availability was there. So when you did have the alternator go down, or if one of your partners had the airplane, you had another one. And yet I had so many pilot friends that said you're overspending. You know, you could get together with people and come up with a cheaper model. And maybe they're right, but I felt I had no maintenance risk because as part of my fees every month and my hourly, all maintenance was covered as long as it wasn't pilot induced, you know, problem. And just like you said, the plane was always ready. So I believed in the program and was an active user.
Well, that's good to hear, Mark. I mean, most of the people, when you talk to people, like I said, there's a few nuances here and there, but the vast majority of people are pretty happy overall with the experiences that they had. Like I mentioned, there's definitely some things that can be done differently here or there with all the different programs out there. And that's one of the things that we tried to address with our 2 year research project before we actually launched the company.
Right.
Very cool.
You know, it seems like that there are, you know, fractional ownership might not necessarily be for everyone. You know, some people might want to, you know, own a Cherokee 140 outright or rent or whatever, you know. So it's, I think, for the people that it really appeals to, it works great, you know, and I think that's important to recognize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And there's definitely some good opportunities out there. I'll say that, I think that we're still learning, in all honesty, but I also think that we created a really compelling product here in Atlanta, Mark, as you mentioned, there is a company that was based here that's been involved in fractional ownership. And we're now twice the size what they were or what they are here in the Atlanta area.
Wow.
And we've only been around for a year and a half here, you know.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. So what do you think the difference between that is? Do you think you're getting out there and telling the story better than they are, or is it a combination of the product, or why do you think that is?
You know, it's not a single thing. It's a combination of a variety of things. One, I think it really boiled down to sitting there and doing a lot of market research. Like I said, over a 2-year period, we talked to a variety of aircraft owners, both that own their own airplanes, ones that were involved in fractional programs, ones that were renting, and asking them what the pros and cons were of all the different aspects and access to aircraft options that they had, and then tried to really develop the best product that we possibly could. And then the second thing is we really tried our hardest to go out there and start educating the market. And, you know, if you ask the team at Ascension, every single day I talk about the fact that I still don't think that we've done as good of a job that we could in terms of educating the market here in Atlanta. But it's going to be a process that we're going to continue to do and something that we look forward to doing across the country. You know, Chicago is definitely one of our next markets that we're very active at looking into going into and hope to be there in the very near future, as well as about 20-plus other markets that we think that this type of program will work in across the country.
I would think, and maybe you'd disagree, one of the challenging times for the existing fractional programs is as the fleet ages, flipping the fleet and getting people to re-up, I think, is what I saw previously, where there was that gap. They get into it, and all of a sudden the airplanes are old, they want something new, and either the market isn't there to get some good cash for your existing inventory. But for whatever reason, I saw it as a challenge for some of your competitors.
Yeah, and you know, the evolution of airplanes over the last decade, and this is no fault to our competitors, but just the industry in a good way, the evolution of airplanes over the last decade has been tremendous. You know, you think back to the first Cirruses that were coming out, they were steam gauged airplanes.
Right.
And now you have prospective turbos out there that have some really significant capabilities. But getting behind that curve is a very difficult thing once you get behind there and try to stay ahead of it. However, at the same time, that same scenario applies to all the turbine fractional airplanes as well. And although they've had issues, they've been able to overcome those issues. On our board right now, we have two very senior level executives from very large turbine fractionals that are involved in our planning process that have really helped us on figuring out how we want to overcome that. And then the second thing that I would say to that is, if you talk to some of the customers that have been involved in it, some of them will tell you that their expectations on what they expected the residual values to be weren't managed properly. Mm-hmm. One of the issues that we've also heard before. So we've been extremely conservative on our residual value numbers that we talk to people at. And I think most of our owners are going to be very pleasantly surprised when it comes time to upgrade to a new airplane, because what we told them, we plan on exceeding.
Yeah, the old under-promise and over-deliver. Good model.
Exactly.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. So that's exciting. And then you've got Ascension Aircraft and Ascension Air. Is there more coming? Is that what you're focused on? So kind of take us through what you're thinking for the next year or two, and then maybe even the next 10 years.
Sure. To start off with, Ascension Aircraft will continue to sell and lease airplanes, hopefully for the foreseeable future. And then Ascension Air, as I mentioned, we're growing here in the Atlanta market. We're the number one in market share here in the Atlanta market. We're getting ready to launch our second location with that, and we plan on growing that market, getting that up to speed, and then duplicating that in other cities across the country. How quickly that will happen, I would love to sit here and tell you that it's going to happen and we'll be in the 10 markets within the next year. I don't think that's realistic. But how quickly it will happen, I really don't have a great answer for you just yet. because what we're learning is, over the last year and a half that we've been operating the fractional program here in Elena, what we've learned has been tremendous. And so we're hoping that once we get into the second location, we'll continue to learn some new things there, but at the same time, apply a lot of the intellectual knowledge that we gained from the Atlanta market into that one, and that market kind of spool up a lot faster than what we did with Atlanta, and then be able to take that energy and that intellectual property and then take that to the next market as well. So hopefully we'll gain efficiencies as we continue to grow. I would love to be in multiple markets over the next couple of years. I hope that that happens. We've got a long road ahead of us to be able to make that happen, but we've got a great team that we've been building here at Ascension, and I think that we're up for the challenge.
Cool. So what I'm hearing then is the Ascension Air, the fractional and management company, is going to be fueling most of your company's growth over the next several
years. Yes. That we're both segments of the company will definitely be growing, but we're putting forth a significant amount of energy towards the fractional program and getting that up and running.
That's terrific. Congratulations again on that.
When did you first realize you were starting to make a difference in aviators' lives of providing, you know, a path of least resistance to ownership, which is probably a dream of theirs, you know, and all that. I think that there's something pretty significant there. When was the first time you realized that?
You know, we're still not quite there yet, because even like here in the Atlanta area, as I mentioned, we're getting better in gaining and educating the market here in Atlanta, but we're still not quite there. There's over 6,000 active pilots here in the metro Atlanta area, and then if you talk to the vast majority of those pilots, I would estimate that less than 20% of them could even tell you who Ascension Air is and what we do with fractional ownership for small airplanes or what the costs are. So until we get those numbers higher, we really haven't had a large enough impact, in my opinion, on being able to either A, be very successful inside of the market, or B, having a large impact on the industry. So one of my immediate goals is to continue to educate the market, both not only here in Atlanta, but across the entire country, because I think that the more people that know about fractional and the benefits associated with it, the better off the entire industry will be.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's kind of good. You know, that's impressive to hear, you know, that you're not, you know, there's this inner desire and passion to keep going and to make things better and to, you know, to really affect pilots and all that. So, I mean, I think that's really important to have, and, you know, certainly it's an outstanding quality to know that, you know, there's guys out there like you really trying to make a difference.
And there's some really cool, innovative things that are going on inside of our industry right now. We'll see what happens, and there's been a lot of really unique ones that have worked and some that haven't. You know, for example, Dayjet came out with a really unique concept. It didn't quite last, but I give them very big kudos for going out there and trying it. Surf Air is another great example of something that's going on that I think could have a really big positive impact on our industry if they're successful. There's another company called Jet Aviva, based out on the West Coast, that has really revolutionized the very light jet market, and the team that's created that company has done a phenomenal job as well.
Yeah, I was very interested. I tried to get on with Dayjet because I loved what they were doing. And then, as Al knows, we had Wade Ierley on our show and fell in love with Surf Air. I'm not familiar with the Jet Aviva, so I'm going to look them up. But I love the things that are going on. It just seems like a whole new positive energy, not only for the people like you and me that love aviation, but for the customers of those companies.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So why do you think aviation is a great space to be an entrepreneur in?
It is and it isn't.
the truth comes out.
There's a lot of passion involved in aviation. Unfortunately, sometimes that passion hasn't been met with a lot of education in the sense of people educating themselves before they launch particular products or companies. And because of that, we've had a lot of failures with it as well. And because of those failures, the investment market isn't always keen on aviation investment opportunities, which is a little bit of a negative compared to, software and IT. There's still a lot of failures in those segments of the industry, but a lot of the investment community and financial community views those as safer investments than what they do aviation, even though there's hard assets typically involved for most aviation companies, and for a lot of IT companies, not so much. So that is a negative downfall, in all honesty, that I think most aviation entrepreneurs can tell you, is that access to the financial markets for growth is a very difficult thing for most aviation companies. If you talk to the founders of Cirrus, they'll tell you the exact same thing, that even though after they became successful, continuing to get access to new capital was not always the easiest thing in the world to do. But they were able to overcome it. And there's definitely some very good success stories out there, people that have been able to do it as well.
Yeah, go to China.
Yeah. Well, that's a interesting answer to, the previous history is really kind of spoken for, investment opportunities. But I think aviation is a great space to do that because of the passion. And, if it's, like you said, Jamal, that if it's thought out right, it could really be a home run, it seems like, with IT and software, it's almost a quick rinse. The return on investment's realized pretty quickly, and it has the potential of being really huge. But, over time, aviation could be the long lasting workhorse, maybe.
And, even though you have a lot of challenges here inside of this industry, I wouldn't change it for the world. Like, this is the one industry that I really want to be a part of. I'm excited to be a part of it. So I hope that I can have a long-term career in here. In addition to the financial issues, one of the other issues that I've had a pretty big passion on is just the next generation workforce for the aviation and aerospace industries. I've had the privilege of working with FAA as their ambassador for aviation and space education for about 9 years now. And, it's amazing to see the changes that have happened in terms of new people getting involved in aviation. And I think we're in store for a lot bigger challenges than what most people realize. Really quick, you'll see that over 50% of the aviation and aerospace workforce is over the age of 50. And that there's a couple of forecasts out there that say that over 40% of the workforce will become eligible to retire by the end of 2014. With the mass exodus of pilots that we have with commercial airlines, the new challenges that we're going to have with airline pilots having to get over 1,500 hours before they can even sit in the right seat of a regional airliner is going to also create some really unique issues. But it's not just the pilots inside of the cockpits. Look at air traffic controllers. Look at the engineers that we're hiring. Look at the mechanics. Throughout the entire industry, we're having a really difficult time attracting qualified and talented people that are going to be leading our industry and working inside of our industry for the years to come.
Yeah, exactly right. Matter of fact, I don't know. It's been quite a while. I think it was 2000. You were the national spokesperson for the EAA Young Eagles program.
Yes, that's correct.
Are you still involved with that? And again, in the sense of recruiting new people in, starting with teenagers and just as you got started?
Absolutely. It's one of the biggest things that I spend a lot of my time on. In addition to working with the Young Eagles program, which I do, as I mentioned, I've been working with the FAA as their ambassador for aviation education. And in that capacity, myself and Amber Riddle, have worked together to create a tour called the Dream Launch Tour, where throughout the school year, I travel to about 20 different cities, go to 3 to 4 different schools in each one of those cities, and really just give a presentation on the aviation industry, how cool and unique it is, how you can have a wide range of different high-paying career fields, and that it's not just about being a pilot or a mechanic, which is what most people consider or think about. There's a lot of other job opportunities that are out there. One of the recent stats that the FAA recently released is that for every pilot that is flying an airplane, there's over 20 other positions that are supporting that airplane and making sure that it flies inside of the aviation and aerospace industries.
when I grow up, I want to be you.
It sounds like it's been a lot of fun and an incredible path, and you know, the journey that you've had thus far, and you know, you've done a lot in such a short period of time. You know, it's really cool to see, and to know that, you know, if you put your mind to it and hard work, even in aviation, as tough of a space as it could be very, very rewarding. And the payback could be huge, not just financially, but you know, a personal satisfaction as well.
Absolutely, and I really hope that the best hasn't come just yet. So hopefully, stay tuned in, and we'll see what happens there in the future.
Yeah. So of course, I have to ask the question, and current companies aside, and sponsors and all that. What's your favorite airplane you've ever flown?
Probably, in all honesty, whatever airplane I'm flying. I love flying aerobatics, which is one of the greatest experiences I've ever had. But it's also cool just to hop in an airplane and fly to a different location that you've never been to before. So it probably really does boil down to whatever airplane I'm flying. I love flying tailwheel airplanes, but at the same time, there's nothing like being inside of a glass cockpit airplane going to a new location as well.
And you sell the Lears and all that. Are you type rated and flying those yourself?
I have not gotten type rated in anything as of yet. There's been a couple airplanes that we're now managing that I've had the opportunity to do such with. The biggest issue is finding the time to leave the office for 2 to 3 weeks now, and solely be focused on doing that and not trying to run and grow the company. So hopefully down the road when we get a little bit more resources, primarily human resources wise, that I can take the time off to do that. I absolutely want to do it. I just haven't gotten there yet.
That's kind of we'll call it your bucket list. As I think through, you've done everything, or at least have done so much, but getting that big turbine jet at your controls, at your fingertips, got to be an exciting thing to think about.
Absolutely. Hopefully one day that will happen.
Well, we need to have a type rating party. You know, we all go get a type, but make it a group thing.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of sales have to happen first to pay the commission to pay that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So when you sell the aircraft, I'm going to go back a little to there. Are you selling around the country, or most of your customers in the Atlanta and the Southeast area?
The majority of our customers are not even in the state of Georgia, for a sales standpoint, as well as a leasing standpoint. We sell and lease the vast majority of airplanes throughout the country and not in Georgia.
Wow. So next time you come to Chicago, I think Al and I owe you lunch.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Exactly. We'll take you out for the deep dish pizza.
Yeah. And then you change your weight and balance.
Yeah. So it's throughout your focusing on the Ascension Air, the management and fractional side of all this, what's been the most surprising thing that maybe has caught you off guard?
In terms of the company or just general aviation experiences?
Within the company.
I think that the biggest thing that I had to learn is how important the team actually is on being able to create what we do. And what I mean by that is that up until about 2 years ago, it was just myself and a few small people at Ascension. And now we've got a team of almost 20 full-time people that work at the company. And if it wasn't for any of those 20 full-time people there today, what we do today wouldn't even be possible. So I've become extremely grateful for the team that we have here and how dedicated that they are on not only making my dream become true, but having a real positive impact on all of our clients and owners inside of our programs that we have.
Oh, it's got to be a great feeling to, well, you had 4 people just, 5 years ago, and now to be 20?
Yeah.
Wow, exciting stuff.
That is, that really is. It's a, what about the people that are part of your team? I actually had the pleasure of meeting a few people, the other weekend in Rome, Georgia at a Cirrus event, and, it's really neat. There's it seems like you have a pretty diverse team. Some people that are hoping to become pilots, some that are seasoned pilots, and things like that. And it's a you know, all different age ranges and all that. And so what's if I think the one of the gentlemen that I met, he was he maybe a new hire or whatnot, but he was starting to learn how to fly, I believe, and things like that. So it as recruiting talent for your team, you know, what's the one thing that you look for while interviewing or something like that? Is it the passion towards aviation?
That's the biggest thing. If someone has a passion for aviation, it has a big impact on their work ethic for an aviation-related company. So that's one of the biggest issues. And then secondly, just making sure that they have not only a passion for aviation, but a passion for whatever position that they may be interested in at Ascension.
You know, I hear that, and as Al knows, for so many years I've tried to get into aviation. I'm a professional salesperson / sales manager, marketing leader over a lot of big and small companies over the years. And I'm always told, no, you just don't have the aviation experience. So to hear you say that is quite refreshing, because I don't think you'll find anyone more passionate than me about it. And it's just how funny how companies in the industry have discounted that, just saying, yeah, but you don't know airplanes. So that's funny.
And, you know, it's definitely a challenging situation, because for a quick example, early on we started hiring a couple of different aircraft sales representatives, and we had some people that had very good sales background but didn't necessarily have an aviation background. And they could go out and sell a car or go out and sell software, but if they didn't have the aviation background, and by aviation background, it doesn't necessarily mean that they sold airplanes previously. It just means that maybe they're a pilot and they know how to talk the talk, or they know how to talk to people about what it's like to be able to shoot an approach down to minimums and actually communicate on that. Those are very important things when you're talking to someone that is interested in buying an airplane or potentially interested in flying an airplane, whatever case may be. Those are really important capabilities. So for me, it's not so much that someone has sold an airplane before and has 20 years of experience for that. It's more about, okay, what sales experience do you have? And then what's your passion for aviation that you may have as well?
Well, just in my, I don't even say defense, because you're not attacking me, but for when you and I talk in the future, I got my license before you were born. we'll put that down in the plus column for Mark Eppner.
You will find out that quite a few people that work at Ascension, that is probably the case for many of them as well. So.
Yeah, well, when your CEO is under 30 years old, maybe that happens a little bit more. So actually, that's an interesting thought. As I say that, you're, I think, 29, right?
I am.
God, he's going to, in like a year or so, you won't be able to be on those lists of the 30 under 30 entrepreneurs. You'll have to go in the 40 under 40s.
This is true.
Yeah. But so you've been doing this since like age 15, so almost 15 years at the age of 30. Is there any burnout of any sort?
It's no burnout. It's more of a challenge that I want to actually make it happen.
Wow. Cool.
That is cool. I mean, that's some serious fuel to keep things rolling and moving and to want more, you know, not necessarily, you know, want more for everything, the industry, the pilot community, and yourself. That's awesome.
So do you have a hobby outside of aviation?
My biggest hobby, I would probably have to say, is, I've traveled a substantial amount, and I love to travel to new locations, and then just love to spend time with friends. Work is definitely challenging sometimes, and so to be able to kind of relax and hang out with friends that you don't necessarily get to see on a regular basis is something that I really enjoy doing as well.
Yeah, and I think maybe it was in high school you were in Taekwondo or something like that?
That is correct. Middle school and high school, I was doing Taekwondo and got my first degree black belt in that before I started flying. And then once I started flying, that one kind of went to the wayside.
All right, Al, I'm seeing a string of commitment to achieving a goal, and then the goal is achieved with this young man we're talking to.
Yeah, exactly.
That's terrific.
It's nice. It's very nice. It, you know, this is truly, inspirational and, you know, probably for many listeners and, yeah, and all that. And, you know, we must really, you know, take the time to thank you for doing what you do and putting the pieces of the puzzle together for all aviators out there and, you know, yourself and making aviation really look good, you know. So, thank you for all the stuff that you do and, you know, like the show really highlights amazing people doing amazing things in aviation. And heck, you're under 30 and you've been at it for 15 years. So thank you very much.
No problem. Well, I really appreciate, honestly, all the help and support that I've gotten from the industry so far, because if it wasn't for them, none of this would have been possible whatsoever. So.
Terrific. So actually we always want to plug our guests too. We're here before we say goodbye to you. So it's ascensionair.com. Is that the website that people
Ascension,
go to?
Ascensionair.net is the fractional website.
All right. And how about Ascension Aircraft?
And Ascension Aircraft is ascensionaircraft.com.
Okay. Got it. Got that. So, Jamal, again, thank you so much for spending part of your evening. You're on the East Coast time zone, so we know it's late. You and I know each other separate, but always... since the day I met you, it's an amazing story, and keep it going and keep providing that I don't know what I want to call it, but that thing where people say, hey, I can do that too. I guess being a mentor in your own right to light the way for those that want to make a thing happen for themselves in aviation.
No problem. Well, I want to say congratulations to you guys reaching your 1-year anniversary with the radio show today.
Yeah.
Thank you for everything you're doing as well.
Thanks a lot. Well, have a great evening, and I'm sure we'll be talking shortly.
Sounds great.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jamal.
How about that?
That's, man, I am inspired.
I'm inspired, and kind of like you, I feel like, okay, I am a failure. I mean, the guy's half my age and done twice as much as me. But no, it's all kidding aside. You know, I agree with him. He said the one thing that is consistent in aviation, and we all know this and our listeners know this, is passion.
Right.
Right? You can talk to anyone, and people I don't know, but they're, let's say I'm talking to their spouse, oh, my husband, my wife, my boyfriend, my girlfriend, they fly and they love it. You know, it's what everyone always says. And I look at other hobbies or other avocations or whatever you want to call it, and people don't talk in those same terms.
No, I would definitely agree with that. And, you know, I've had a lot of, friends that are bankers or an accountants and things like that. And, you know, you certainly don't hear any of that. You know, oh man, I just did a financial statement for somebody and it was awesome. It doesn't sound as cool as shooting an approach down to minimums and having to go miss because there's a deer on the runway and then diverting and, you know, saving the day and end up checking into a Hilton, you know, and having a great story, you know.
And then having a beer and going and do it again.
Yeah, right.
You know, let me ask this to you, okay? Because, you know, we touched on the subject with Jamal, and, you know, he's built a wonderful business there. But the fractional I was with here ultimately had to pull out. They couldn't find it. And he said it's not just a Chicago problem. It's all over, and it's a lack of education. But consistently hear people say the value prop isn't there. And I disagreed, obviously. I put down my down payment.
Right.
And I spent more than if I had bought it myself with partners.
Right.
But at the same time, I had better availability in our program. I didn't use this benefit, some of my partners did. Go to another city and fly the airplane without anything other than a local checkout. You know what I mean? You're can go fly the airplane. Actually, don't even need a checkout. The maintenance of all of a sudden engine's gone, you don't pay a dime for it. So
right.
That's peace of mind. So I see it as a great value, and I'd say most of the people I talk to say it as, no, you can do better on your own. What do you think?
Well, I think that it definitely appeals to a particular person and a And all that. Fractional ownership certainly isn't going to be for everyone, you know, and I'm sure the owner of NetJets and Citation Shares can say the same thing, you know what I mean? That's the same thing as this, except for business jets and, you know, things like that. So there's certainly different avenues to go. But as far as getting the people out there, you know, I think Jamail hit the nail on the head. It's a marketing issue. You know, everybody essentially wants to own an airplane. There's very few that probably thought of fractional ownership, and then we'll get to the nitty gritty of it. It might not necessarily be, you know, any cheaper than going out on your own with an older aircraft, but, you know, what's the price of that peace of mind that you had, you know?
Exactly, the value of it, because, you know, he mentioned it, and it's the exact same thing I went through when I first thought about this. I said, you know, I'm going to go buy, I think I was looking at like a Piper Arrow. I said, okay, it's $70,000, which back in 2004 or 5, whatever it was about the price for a share,
right,
of an eighth of a share of the fractional. And then I said, I'm going to pay $1,000 a month per hangar, because that's what community hangars cost in Chicago at this airport. I know,
right,
you can get a lot cheaper. And my monthly for insurance, a million smooth and hangar, all the maintenance, was less than that. So I said, why would I go out and buy an airplane myself to get one that travels at half the speed, not quite, but, and is an old airplane?
Right.
So to me, I just kept on coming up, why wouldn't I do this?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
One thing that I've always kind of, you know, battled with, and, you know, this fractional ownership, you do own the airplane, right? But you own it with other people, and it's, yep, nothing different than maybe a partnership. But, you know, there's something that's a little bit different, you know, about that, you know, it doesn't, you know, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts since you participate in a program like this, but does it actually feel like you own an airplane?
And I hesitate because it really does, although I feel like any airplane I'm flying I kind of own. What was interesting is the fractional provider that I was involved with worked very hard to say, don't meet the other owners. So you felt like it was just yours, and don't worry about good partnership, bad partnership. We'll take care of that. It's your airplane. You do that. And I got all of the partners together, and I said, hey, let's meet. And I brought them here. We got something, and we just started talking. And the people that manage the program were like, hey, we don't want you doing this.
Right.
We want to get on the phone. We want to know what you guys are talking about. And I thought that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like we were complaining. We wanted to make, you know, I wanted to make sure that everyone was keeping the plane clean, because we all had a pride of ownership, but we had different views of how it should operate. And the company actually asked me to update the databases and wash the plane and take it to maintenance. But I thought it was a good idea, and
yeah,
we all did too. I formed friendships from the people I got to meet, because not the company that was the fractional, but that I did it on my own. I said, let's all get together. I'll bring in pizza and talk. And we became friends for the
right
most part.
Yeah, exactly.
That's, matter of fact, that's how I got my ride in the Lima Lima team. Because,
yeah,
one of those guys was a pilot for the Lima Lima squadron.
Nice. A text message just came in, and it said that to this person who's actually, I believe, looked into fractional ownership programs. He said, to him, it's more of a country club concept, or an equity-based country club concept, where, you know, you go to a club or something like that, say, hey, this is your club, you make it what it is. And, you know, really, I guess that is one of the things. You need to really, you know, you control how you feel about it. You know, and if you go into the attitude or the concept of, hey, I actually do own an airplane and all that, you know, that there might be a middleman to it, but, you know, that's essentially yours.
Well, and if you look at the title, my name's on the title. I own that airplane.
Right.
Other people are on that title too. That's all. They're like partners.
Right.
You know, it would be different if they held the title to it, but no, it says Mark Eppner or my LLC.
Right.
As the owner. So I had no problem saying I own part of an airplane.
Right. Absolutely. Oh, it's a cool concept, and I think it definitely works. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily work for everyone, but it's a great program.
Pay for the mitigation of risk, the maintenance risk, because that's the other thing I see with ownership of an airplane in today's world. It's so darn expensive to maintain it.
Right.
And, you know, the IO-550 is a great engine, but I've seen a lot of people that don't manage the temperatures right.
Sure.
right? And so it, we're going through top overhauls, replacing cylinders here, there, whatever. We ended up doing pretty good because we spent a lot of time focusing on engine management. But I think in the early days especially, people weren't doing that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And so it was nice. Okay, needs an engine, I don't care.
Right.
If I'm in a fractional, if it's mine, I care because now I got to come up with $35,000, $45,000 to put a new engine in.
Right, sure, sure.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty interesting. And, you know, you do have a, you know, there is a certain element of ownership and things that you want to manage or hedge against. So you guys actually did, you know, what was that covered in your cost of the, a new engine?
Yeah, absolutely. I had no maintenance costs. The only thing that we, if someone burned up the brakes, so we did pre-flight and post-flight and obviously post-flight. And with the Cirrus, there's, as most people know, on the wheels, there's a little sticker. And as it turns gray and when it goes black, you're not allowed to fly until it basically means the brakes got too hot. So that would be a pilot expenditure. If someone left the battery on and burned it out and we had to do some maintenance, the pilot would pay for that. You crack a wheel pan, pilot pays for that. Sometimes people didn't fess up and, you know, the company had to eat some of that, which was wrong. Or if we upgraded, we wanted to upgrade radios, everyone took the hit, as you would if you owned it. You know, it's moved from right. a 430 to a 650 or something like
right.
that.
Right, sure.
Matter of fact, when we got together, we were talking about upgrading to WAST, and did we want to pay for that? But stuff that just happens to the airplane, 100% covered by the company. And that ultimately, I think, was part of their demise because they kept older airplanes. We didn't flip them. They weren't under warranty, and they started to, you know, the maintenance cost started to eat into whatever profits there were.
Right, definitely. There's a, we got another text message in saying, you know, it's basically essentially mitigating the financial risk, but you assume the collective risk for the hull and liability. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
The collective risk for the hull and liability. I don't know what they mean because with this was a million smooth. My insurance was covered. My maintenance was covered. I'm trying to think. I had an eighth of a share. It's more now, but at that point it was somewhere between $800 and $900 a month.
Right.
For a non-turbo SR-22, as they were 2005 models. That's when we got it. One was brand new. Another one was used a year or so later.
Right.
So yeah, it was $800 a month and we paid about $100 an hour. And we paid for an eighth of a share from an equity position, you know, for your mortgage, if you will.
Right. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. What about getting out of, you know, out of the program?
Then you try and find someone to buy your share. In this case, they decided to pull out of Chicago, and sold the plane and we got an eighth less some marketing fee.
Was it your decision to pull the plane?
No, it was the organization. They decided they couldn't make money in Chicago.
You owned the plane though.
Right, but they had the right to sell it after a settlement date. And they kept the plane a lot longer than the settlement date. There were some issues I wasn't happy with the way they treated us at the end. But, I forget what year it was, they were supposed to flip into a new airplane. I'm glad they didn't because I would not have re-upped. I couldn't afford to come up with the incremental dollars to buy yet another airplane.
Right.
My eighth that would have come out of the sale of this used one, because there was just so many Cirrus on the market.
Right.
So the used market was way down and the news were expensive. So I actually liked that they didn't flip for new aircraft. They just put them in, put a new engine, put in a paint job, that kind of thing.
Sure.
So, and some of my partners wanted a new airplane, but they had more money than me.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story or maybe a long way around to say it's right for some people, that program.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I like to say, I value.
Yeah, absolutely.
So but finishing up, you know, that's all on the program, but, Jamal, what a impressive young man.
Oh my goodness. I mean, seriously, very inspirational and, you know, it just really motivates me to want to do more. You know, off the air, you and I have spoken, you know, that just, you know, talked about our own individual goals and things like that. And, you know, I just love, and, you know, we talked about how this radio show kind of inspires us
right.
a little bit.
And, well, because of the people we talk to.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And we, you know, in pursuit of our own goals and things that we want to accomplish in aviation. And, you know, this is kind of a great, Jamail's a great guest at a great time to reiterate that point.
Yeah. I don't have any regrets, right? You know, I'm very happy with the first part of, I'll say my first half of life.
Yeah.
Yeah, going to 120. But, you know, I think back sometimes what I could have done in aviation, if I had just had the drive that he did at such a young age.
Yeah.
Or the vision, you know, back in the 70s, flying, at least in my neighborhood, you didn't think about flying.
Right.
I don't know if anyone flew in our community.
Right.
Right. I was kind of the outcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So anyway, congratulations, Dan, and what a terrific young man. And I know he'll be successful making Ascension Air and Ascension Aircraft something special for the industry to be proud of, if you will, as we move forward.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. I've been kind of having a little yearning for an airplane myself. You know, one thing I've been kind of doing some soul searching, if you will, with aviation.
I know you. You're going to buy a 152. Your favorite airplane.
Actually, I think I may have moved out of the 152.
Oh my God, it's about freaking time.
And, up to Cherokee 140s.
Wait a minute. It's the 140 is less than 150. Anyway, that's not going to go. That's not a Sunday night
show. I'm talking raw horsepower. No, I'm just
kidding.
Oh, but there's a, you know, it's really neat to see something like that. And, you know, there's a, last spring or this spring, I went out to San Francisco and flew with Jacob Eiting and things like that.
I remember.
That.
Yeah, he was a guest on our show.
Yeah, multiple guests, which, by the way, we're going to have him on our show again for his next, aviation venture. So here's a guy that's like, you know, out in Silicon Valley, absolutely like killing it from an aviation software hobby business. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And we'll get more into that later on. But you know, he had a little Cherokee 140, and you know, I sit there and I think and I look. It's like, hey, a partnership, a four man partnership at a Cherokee 140 would not be a bad thing. You know, and not be a very expensive endeavor. You know, and if everybody kind of puts in a monthly fee as well as a, you know, just pays for their own gas, it could be a pretty cool thing.
I agree. As a matter of fact, I have a better one for you. And I don't know what a 140 costs. Obviously, it's a plane that went away in the early 70s.
Yeah.
I actually started my training in a,
nice.
A 140. But I just got a call from someone I know. You're smiling. Someone just tweeted or texted something. What's that?
Somebody said, I see you more as a Turbo 210 guy.
A Turbo 210?
Yeah.
It was one just pulled up on the ramp. Was it someone that was flying that?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I would say, yes, I have to agree with you, but my wallet certainly wouldn't.
Well, so I have another club member that actually lives out in the West Coast. You know what I'm talking
yes.
about. He has been flying. He's your age, right? Under 30.
And, right.
He's been flying with people that he's met through his current job throughout the, Southern California. And one guy came to him and said, hey, my buddy is much older gentleman, losing his medical, wants to sell his 1956 V-tail Bonanza.
Right.
Thing has been, he's only the second owner. Clean history, you know, he upgraded, has the double yoke, but it's a 1956, and I think he's selling it for 30 grand.
Wow.
For a V-tail with, and I don't even know it's which engine at this point, the 285.
Doesn't even matter at that price.
Right. And so he's saying to me, and Marcy, if you're listening, my wife, just let me dream a little bit here. You know, you split it with a few people, maybe you put 30 grand more in radios, although is that smart to buy an airplane for 30,000 and spend 30,000 more? On radios?
Why do you need, why do you need it? Why do you need the radios?
Well, to me, I just want more advanced avionics. And when I say that, I want an autopilot that will work for me and hard IFR. And I want, a good set of GPS. I don't know what that costs. So maybe I'm thinking 15,000 for the radios, 15,000 for the autopilot. I'm guessing at this. I'm maybe
yeah.
real fast, but whatever it is, when you buy a $30,000 airplane, and I've been since told to wait to, if you're going to go VTOL, go at least 60s. But that aside, at what point have you spent too much on adding avionics or whatever to the airplane? I just got someone wants to buy it with me.
Yeah.
You know, at what point does it become not a good business decision? Yeah, buy an airplane for $10,000, but buy avionics for $50,000, you know, whatever.
Right.
Do you have an answer, your thoughts?
Well, to, as far as avionics go, my thinking is, why dump all the stuff and why dump all this extra money into the airplane? Just replace it when it breaks. I guess it's a quality of life issue with your piloting life. But I go back and forth on that. It's like, hey, you know, you're losing the essence of the deal at that point, you know.
But are you really? I mean, and I don't know. I have to do more research, but I am very comfortable in more advanced avionics, and that's what I want in my airplane. And if I can get a solid airframe around it that's safe, even if it's not brand new, it makes me feel like I have a newer aircraft.
Right.
That's just personal preference.
Right.
You know, so I may be stupid. I'm not saying that it isn't, but I want something that's going to take me at a reasonable speed, with the, not a guarantee of safety, but, you know, mitigated any safety risk and have it be as advanced cockpit as possible because I'm comfortable in that.
Right, right, definitely. No, I think that's a, you know, there's the comfort level in that. I guess you'd have some equity in the plane, but, you know, I don't know. It wouldn't hurt to challenge your flying a little bit maybe from a steam gauge perspective. Who knows?
Well, and I'm not saying don't have steam gauges. This will definitely have steam gauges,
right.
But put a couple 430s in there and an STEC 55X or whatever, is all I'm asking for. I don't need an MFD, PFD, or maybe you put an Aspen system. I don't know, or
yeah.
G500, a Garmin 500. But I know like this weekend I wanted, or this past week, I went to Cedar Rapids. There was no airplane available for me.
Right.
You know, I had someone fly me out, or I flew out and they flew it back and then come pick me up then 4 or 5 days later. It would be nice to have my own airplane and,
yeah.
And go.
You know, there's part of me says, you know, some of these, maybe I'm saying that just because, you know, I wouldn't be able to afford to start, you know, buying an airplane, throwing all this avionics into it.
That's why you have partners.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you have partners. But even the cost divided by four, that might not work. But, you know, there's something about it. I'm convinced, and I've been talking to one of our regular listeners about this too. You know, I'm convinced that there is a way to fly cheap. You know, like,
all right, a glider?
So if you have a glider, but no, I'm talking about, you know, doing things and having like a realistic, you know, flying life, outside of, you know, maybe just running for the $100 hamburger, you know, 30 miles away and back. You know what I mean? I like that. Don't get me wrong, but you can only do that so much. You know,
I agree.
Before you kind of get bored at it. And I'm just really wondering if there truly is a way out there, you know, for a guy like me who, you know, came from making peanuts. Now, you know, I'm making a little bit more than peanuts, but as you said, I don't make popcorn, you know, just flying up.
I said that.
Yeah, exactly. No, you did. You did.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
And not making popcorn anymore, or not, you know, certainly not making popcorn, but not making peanuts, flying a King Air around, but, you know, and just making a little rainy day money flight instructing.
Right.
I wonder if there really is a way of flying and owning an airplane, you know, with partners, of course, and actually having a utility to, you know, go to a 2-3 hour radius around here. You know, is that really a realistic possibility?
Well, I think it is, and certainly I know of flying clubs that have, you know, older, I won't use the term beat up, although I just did, but aircraft that you get a lot of people buy into and you get multiple aircraft and now you're flying for $50-$60 an hour, 70, whatever it is, obviously with fuel flow and gas price will determine that, but I think it is possible, but you have to be willing to get a 140 or,
yeah.
And where I'm thinking, how do I go, I like 174 knots, right? That's my magic number. 200 miles an hour. I can go to Kansas City in a little 2+ hours. I can go to Cedar Rapids an hour, see my children. And that's what's in it for me.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I'm sitting there thinking like, oh yeah, I'd love to do that. I'd love to do 140 knots, true airspeed, 8 gallons an hour, or even, you know, an SR20. But, you know, the reality is there's no way, unless I change something and become the next Jamail, I won't be able to, you know, afford something like that. So, you know, coming to grips with the reality of like, hey, you know, this is a possibility, you know, and you can't carry 4 people, but you know what? Maybe, you know, how many times am I going to be carrying 4 people? Probably not that many. I'd probably be carrying me and a passenger. And, you know, if I wanted to go up to Duluth per se, you know, in a little Cherokee 140, totally doable trip. But, you know, maybe it's 3 hours instead of the 2.5 in a, you know, a little bit faster airplane, which I'm totally priced out of.
Yeah, no, you know, there's obviously an equation here.
Yeah.
Right? And one is affordability, utility, all of that. And if you go through controller.com, you can find a lot of aircraft that have a lot of different capabilities at a similar price. Okay?
Right.
You want a 6-seater that costs $50,000, you're going to have to go way back, right?
Or
have a run-out engine or something like that. You can pick up a twin for next to nothing, obviously.
Right.
So there's flexibility, and I think you have to decide on what's your budget and then see what's available. Just kind of shop on price. My dad used to always tell us, he was joking, of course. He said, the best way for us to go out in the restaurant is, don't look at the items on the menu. Go down the price side, and when you get to the lowest one, the lowest price, move from right to left, and you're going to find out what you're having for dinner that night.
The lowest one?
Yeah. And again, it was a joke, but same kind of thing. Why did I just get a beep in my ear?
I don't know.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully we're still on the air.
Yeah, it means we're doing awesome.
Is that what it means?
Yeah.
So in the last year, I've never heard it before, so we sucked for the last year.
Yeah. Hey, that's why we have a happy birthday us.
Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday to us.
No, but yeah, I think there is an equation out there, and you know, I've actually started to toy with the idea of it, and you know, ideally would a Cherokee 140 be my dream airplane? No, but.
But it's an airplane.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sitting there thinking about it, and I'm like, hey, you know what? And you start looking at Cherokee 140 distances. I mean, you could certainly go to Kansas City and that thing. You can go up to, you know, there's all these like little islands in northern Wisconsin along in Lake Superior. I'm like, wow, that's cool. Mackinac Island or, you know, Nashville or something like that. It's like, hey, you know what? That, now we're talking, you know, it's part of the, it's not necessarily the plane that you get in there. It's just the fact of flying and enjoying it. And heck, you flew an airplane there, you know, and you got to choose the destination. That's been my biggest thing that I've been preaching, you know.
Yeah, I've heard you say that a lot.
Is that it's not, you know, flying nearly every day is, it's awesome. Don't get me wrong, but you know, there's still a little part of you that wishes that you could choose the destination. And let me say this, I haven't chosen a destination in an airplane in a long time.
Well, yeah, but you do take your students to like, hey, let's go to Dubuque for this.
Yeah, it's very.
Hey, how about Oshkosh? That's a good destination.
Yeah, I mean, it's very influential, but you know, there's a, you know, because I want them to have a good time, you know.
Sure.
So it's
all good stuff.
It's not necessarily a. I want them to do the flying that they want to do.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so yeah, I think this is pretty cool, and there are some pretty good value propositions out there, and I think it's the reality is once you come to grips with what you can do with your flying budget, you know, you can still have a great time in a one, if it's a 150, you can still have a really awesome time.
Well, of course, and you know, I often say, and sometimes tongue in cheek, in a slower airplane, it's great because it just means I get to fly that much more.
Right.
Right. So I guess I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth because here I say I want 175 knots, but on the longer ones, I know that my wife, for instance, Kansas City was kind of beyond her limit.
Yeah.
But she did it the last time, and we had some cash come back. We had to navigate around weather and ended up 2-hour flight became a 3-hour flight. But she did great, and I just can't imagine being 4 or 5 hours in the airplane, even though in the car it would take 10 hours.
Yeah.
Right? So even at half the time, I like it to be 25% of the time.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, so I think that there's that. I mean, I'm wondering if I change my mission you know, I always think like, okay, it would be awesome to go out to, you know, leave on a Friday night and fly out to Denver, you know, for the weekend, then fly back. Well, mm-hmm. yeah, that's probably not going to be a reality in a Cherokee 140, but, you know, it's really adjusting your mission. You can have the same type of utility if you adjust your mission for that particular airplane. And, you know, a Cherokee 140 isn't going to be decked out in anything. And,
right.
you know, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, okay, if I had an iPad with a Stratus and, you know,
becomes a glass cockpit airplane.
Yeah, it essentially does, you know, and I can fly confidently. I would feel fine, you know, confident flying hard IFR with an iPad as well, you know, knowing that you can't use it legally, you know, throw
yeah,
that
no,
out there.
And
but having a, you know, just filing slant alpha. Or slant uniform.
Well, and you bring up a good point about with the iPad and all that. But I think you could go to Colorado in a 140.
Oh, totally.
Our Archer, a former member, took it to Montana for the weekend.
Yeah.
Right? Which is every bit as far, if not farther, because you got to go a little bit north.
Right.
And just for the weekend.
Yeah.
And I was so proud to see that little Archer at whatever 120 knots actually going west was probably a ground speed of a lot less.
Right.
But she did it. And she's one of those women CEOs I was talking about
yeah.
at the beginning of the show, by the way, that is perfect for aviation because they use it. A lot of people use it for what it really can deliver.
Right.
Aviation I'm talking about.
Oh, definitely.
But then I talked to another guy, and I think I just saw him come back in this Turbo 210. He said, you know what? If it floats or flies, rent it, don't buy it.
Right.
You know, and I guess that must be a common saying. I hadn't heard it before. But that would suggest, you know, even going out and buying a 140, maybe not the smartest thing, although just saying, but what do you think?
You know, I don't know. You know, there's going to be some type of costs involved, right?
Right.
You know, I'm not going to, you know, I have a goal of owning an airplane one day. You know, there's no point around. It doesn't, that cost of ownership doesn't bother me. I'm not scared of it. You know, if I don't have the money for it, then I'm scared of it. But you end up having a, that's a risk that I'm going to have to take, you know, and all that. I just don't think that, I think the thing that really appeals to me about ownership is you can do it the exact way that you want it. You know, you could have a, you know, this is something that, you know, it represents more than, than I'm flying. It's a lot. It's a culmination of a lot of hard work.
Yep. No, absolutely. I would, the one thing I like about rental is, and I just wrote an article about this today, that I can pick the airplane for the mission.
Right.
And if it's down in annual, I'm not paying for that. I buy another airplane. Sure, I pay a premium hourly rate.
Right.
To the owner, but again, it's a value proposition, just like the fractional program we talked about before.
Right.
But I have to confess, I say all that, and I'd love to own an airplane.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Matter of fact, the one I want to buy and lease back to the club is the Icon A5 or one of these other Amphib LSAs.
Good man. Good man.
Because I think that just moves the club and other clubs into a world that really you don't see much.
Right.
I think it makes it very popular and people want it.
To be, especially from the seaplane aspect. There's very, very few, places, if at all, where you can actually rent a seaplane solo and go fly.
Yeah, and I say this without having any knowledge of what the insurance will be like, but it's, especially in Chicago, we're on one of the largest lakes around. I mean, obviously a huge, part of the Great Lakes, and people have homes. that they go to every weekend along the lake, either in Michigan or in Wisconsin.
Right.
And it's, what a great airplane to get it to.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. They have a, you know, it's a great airplane to do it. And I think it certainly fits its, a particular market. You know, I think that because aviation, well, I think you're in a different cost, you know, profile and mission at that point, but, if you can do it, why not?
Yeah. Well, and I say that and maybe I should look at a lake amphibian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You like that, right? Yeah,
we'll get your seaplane rating over the weekend.
You can't give me one. You're not a seaplane CFI.
Yes, I am.
Are you really?
Yeah.
That's a separate.
Nope. No, sir.
Wait a minute. So you have you're a CFI, CFII. Are you an MEI too, by the way?
Yes.
So you have all of that. If you want to be an instructor in seaplane, do you have to get an additional rating? Are you saying your CFI, once you add your own airplane single and ASE, S?
Yes.
Single engine C?
Yes,
that automatically makes your CFI over that as well?
Correct.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yes, because it's on the category. So there's a, like a glider. You have to get a CFIG because it's different, you know, class. So I'm going to pull out my CFI ticket here, but, yeah, that makes you a CFI seaplane instructor. So we can go out and get your seaplane rating.
All right. I think we have someone that's wanting to call in.
Okay.
So let me just get my info.
That's outstanding. So it ends up being pretty cool. Right now on the back of my airplane, single engine and multi engine instrument airplane. So that's the thing is you're able to instruct in the category of airplane, and class. So it doesn't say airplane single engine land. It just says airplane single and multi engine. Instrument airplane. So.
I am very impressed.
Yes.
You're quite the accomplished aviator. How many licenses do you have there?
Three. Take the car. Whoa! That must be a pilot call.
This is a call in, yeah.
Here we go. I haven't had one of those in a while.
Well, that's because we haven't been hooked up. Okay, so now do I have to do anything? Can you hear me, caller?
I can hear you just fine.
Wow.
Wow.
That's loud. I mean, how are we doing there?
Yeah.
That's a little loud. Al, do the...
Jeez.
Set the volumes. Go ahead. This must be Alex. Man,
you can't have this conversation about buying planes without talking to me. I feel like I feel empty-handed not being there in the conversation.
Well, we felt very empty-handed as well, so now our hands are full. Because
getting to what Waterloo was saying about flying cheap, I know Mark, you and I, we had talked about this. God, probably when we first put the Cirrus in the club, and you know, we're just kind of looking around and saying, you know, what would be another nice option or a third plane. And I think I always used to say, even though I know Leading Edge was just that, I'm the Leading Edge of glass cockpits and everything like that. I think I always said, I think what the club always needed was like that $100, you know, aircraft or whatnot and that sort of thing. And you know, it kind of takes away from what, let's say, that we had already in the club, versus what some other folks had. But, you know, I really think there is a way to do that. But that aside, you know, that's not really the reason why I called. The reason why I called was because of the things that you were talking about with detail and the Cherokee. And if you got four guys together, I don't think it's a big deal spending the money on the avionics because, you know, you're just spreading it over four people. And if you guys, you know, those four people fly the plane, you know, 24 months, as far as I'm concerned, it's paid for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. If you're by yourself, then I like Al's story. You know, I talked about that with him before, you know, with the iPad and the Stratus and that sort of thing. And, you know, it works well, especially if somebody wants to be on it by himself and that sort of thing. The affordability is really there. And I really think there is a great way to fly cheaply, and I think it can be done, and I'm sure there's people out there that are doing it, and the fact of the matter is that, you know, we kind of get drunk on, I think, on the new aircraft and the Cirruses and stuff like that. I mean, I'm guilty of that, as you know. And, I don't know if I would own that plane by myself. You know, with having three people, it makes it affordable and, a little bit easier. And I know my partners and I, before in the past, we always toyed around about, you know, possibly even bringing a fourth partner in or something like that, because we can probably, you know, we could probably put somebody else in there and it probably wouldn't affect us much. And most people that we see with Cirruses that have a partnership probably got four guys in it anyway, and they still had a couple of main pilots on top of it. So, you know, I think it can work. But again, it was just an idea of, you know, trying to just, again, fly cheaper and bringing, you know, those fixed costs down and that sort of stuff. But when you talk about these planes, and, you know, and I do look at them, you know, because I have the disease and I look at everything. And then you start to try to justify it, just like Al does, and I've done it too. It's like, okay, I'm like you. I want to go 200 miles an hour. But you know what? If I can save $100,000 and go 150 miles an hour, I can probably live with that, you know?
Right. And, but you go 150 miles an hour in your car.
Yeah, I know. I don't put the videos on YouTube on that because I don't know. I think you get in trouble for that one. you're flying as fast as you drive. I get it. But, yeah, so I really think there is a way to do it. And I love talking about that all the time because it just is because flying is so expensive. I mean, and you get into the, I think the problem that you have today is things are probably not as good as today for folks as it was 5 years ago. And, I heard you guys talk about it in the past, how clubs struggle and maybe, you know, if they have a fleet or they can't rent them. And, we had, when we were trying to figure out a cost for the Cirrus, what they rented for, and I was calling around across the country. And I think, I don't know if I spoke with you about this. I mean, I was getting rates on what these guys were charging on the Hobbs. And when I was telling them how much that the Cirrus SR-20 was flying in the club, I said, we're probably doing about 40 to 50 hours a month. I didn't find anybody across the country that was renting their plane, their Cirrus, that much. You know, I mean, if they felt fortunate if they were able to get 10 hours a month out of it.
Oh, my goodness. No, you never told me that.
Yeah. I think I found one club, and I think it was in California, that was probably, you know, second to us, like maybe 25 hours or something like that, you know. And I was just like, wow, I know how we were doing, and we were paying the bills and, you know, the cost, you know, all the costs were being covered and that sort of thing. And I felt very fortunate. And you know me, I never went into it with the idea that this is going to make me money. Obviously not. It's just how do I defer some of the cost? Mm-hmm. And it was working out well. So when I go across and I hear what these people are paying, not paying, but how many hours that they're renting the Cirrus, I felt really good about it. And I think people that have planes and bring them, and use lease backs and stuff like that, I think are maybe, maybe they kind of shoot for the stars and it doesn't happen. That's how come I always felt like before, when you can say, you know, we have X amount of members, we got so many that fly and the rest don't, because maybe, you know, things just ain't good and are not good and they just can't afford it. And it's like, okay, well, $50 an hour for instruction, you know, $80 or $90 for a plane, and then you can get all in, you know, with instruction for $140. I mean, really appeal to somebody. Yeah, you're right. You're not going to have the plane, you know, that's sitting, that's parked next to it that you're going to fly with. It is going to be older, and that sort of thing. But if it's a way for someone to kind of achieve that dream to go ahead and try to get his pilot's license, and, you know, that's probably the, you know, the cost effective way to do it is you have to do it with an older plane. There's just no two ways around it. When I was looking for a school before I joined, Leading Edge, and I was over at a different airport, and, you know, they kind of showed me what they were going to teach me, but I pointed to the Cirrus. He kind of looked at me like I was a nutball, you know, and he was just like, well, you know, we could teach you in that, but, you know, you do have to realize that the cost of your training is probably going to double because of that. And, I just didn't care. You know what I mean?
So right. And that's, playing. You know, that's the important thing. But, you know, you always were the Cirrus and all that. But yet when you start talking about buying airplanes,
You were looking at the Aztec. You were talking about a G1 Cirrus SR22 that you, you know, put an engine in or whatever. So you've changed, I think, since you bought that SR20. You've changed to say, hey, I've got to do this more economically and yet still end up with a great airplane.
Yeah, and that's how I feel. The partnership I'm in, it's fine. You know, it's affordable, you know, because I have three, you know, I have two, I always tell these guys, I got two great friends I can split the bills with, you know what I mean?
Right.
And if the man was 900, I always say, no, it's 300. That's what I owe you guys. And, so it's okay. I mean, I don't think I would own that plane. I know I wouldn't own that plane by myself, just because when you do get into that side of the technology and, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, I'm paying for the insurance for the Avidyne screens, and, you know, maybe if you just do 1 year, it's $1,800. And okay, when I do it with two other guys, you know, it's $600 a piece. It's not a killer, but now if I'm paying that bill, you know, $1,800 every year, and then the repacking of the parachute, you know, if you fly 100 hours a year and you got to repack it in 10 years, and, you know, what is that per hour? I mean, that's another $15 an hour, let's just call it, for reserves, or $12 an hour, you know, 1,000 hours, 12 grand, you know. So, you know, all these things kind of start to add up, as opposed to $4 where I can live with that. And that's the reason why I don't think I would own that one by myself.
Right.
Just because, you know, the cost and that. The reason why I always used to say G1 is because, you know, I kind of have the best of both worlds. I do have that PFD, and, you know, I can have a backup as an iPad, and, you know, MFD has frozen on me before on one occasion, and I was out, you know, a little bit of Lake Shore, and I just broke out the iPad, you know, just to cut in between Gary and Midway, because, you know, my other stuff was out, and, you know, I kind of chuckled, because I laughed, because I'm like, okay, here's a $900 tool that I'm using, and I'm in this plane, and that froze on me. I mean, it was okay once I landed and just kind of pulled the circuit breaker and pushed it back in. But, you know, it's just, sometimes I just feel that that's unacceptable. But,
right.
And that's why I always said the G1. And, you know, I change my mind about planes like people change their underwear. I mean, it's just crazy. I told Al a long time ago, I have a disease that I like everything, and I can understand why these guys have these hangers that do real well, and they got 25 planes in them, because they just don't know what the hell they want. You know what I mean? And it's
now you're making me dream again.
Yeah, I would be just as guilty as they are if I was, let's say, in a position that these folks were, that they can just go, you know, just go spend money like diarrhea on airplanes and have one of every one.
You know, on tonight's show, at no point did I ever expect I was going to hear the word diarrhea.
Oh, absolutely. See, uh-oh. And that's the other word. And that's the other word you hear all the time, too. Absolutely. I'm listening to the show tonight, and I think we've said this before. What was the word that everybody used to say before absolutely? Do you remember?
That's the thing or something like that.
No.
That's
the thing.
Yeah. That was like everybody was saying that's the thing. Now everybody's saying absolutely, and I just wonder what the next one's going to be. You know, it'll come out.
It's going to say happy birthday, Simple Flight.
That's right.
What they're going to say.
Yeah, happy birthday, Simple Flight. Hey, and you did make me chuckle today, I got to tell you.
I'm glad I did. Yeah, you were the one.
Yeah, you know.
I thought everyone laughed at the jokes, and then when he said that, I remembered, Alex, because you have that gutter type of mind.
Yeah, it was like half 30, so it was good.
Great.
Well, anyway, all right, guys, I'll let you go.
Hey, Alex, thanks for the call in.
Right.
See ya.
All right, see you. Bye-bye. Right. See ya.
Bye.
Well, this is not happy birthday anymore.
Yeah, it is. It's a jazz rendition.
A jazz rendition.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Somebody just called our show a drinking game.
Why?
I don't know
what that means.
I'd like to know.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of weird. We should play it one time.
A drinking game?
Yeah, we'll play it.
Beer pong?
Our show is a drinking game. I don't know.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be conducive as a full-fledged thing. But anyway. You know what? It's, I can't believe it. Our show has flown by, as usual, and so has the year.
Yeah, what do you mean my show is a show?
Yeah, you want to talk into your microphone?
No.
Oh, yeah.
I'm bending over to look at the, there, to plug that in, because when you talk about the show ending, it makes me want to cry.
Oh, man. Like a little girl. Yeah, every time I guess somebody says absolutely, which is probably me, this person is saying that we should take a drink.
And oh, there you go. That is kind of a good drink.
Yeah, and I think that is a our fan base would probably be
right in
well
there.
Over the legal limits.
Yeah.
At the end of the show.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Such is life. As long as they weren't flying afterward.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, it is after 2200 here, which is the end of yet another great show. Happy birthday to us.
Happy birthday to us. And guess what? I've got a birthday present for you.
Okay, an airplane. I want Cherokee.
All the AV geeks have renewed our contract for another 52 episodes.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we thank our listening audience not only for their involvement, but for giving us the encouragement to keep this thing going. We get a lot of positive feedback each week.
Exactly.
Teaching them things, introducing them to amazing people, doing amazing things in aviation, which was the genesis for this program.
Or if it's me, it's usually stumbling over my words and getting the NASCAR crash effect.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you're asking a question, I think, you know what, I might be perfect time for me to run to the bathroom. I got plenty of time.
Oh, because I just sit there and I talk and I can't get the question out.
I'm just like, okay, where is he going? It's coming.
No,
stay with it. Wait.
I'm not the best at asking questions.
It's gone!
Yeah, she finally got it out. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know what? Because I think my aviation ADD takes my,
You were talking.
Yeah.
And then you look down because people are tweeting in.
People are tweeting in because they love the show.
But you got to multitask or not multitask. If you multitask, then you have to still stay with the show.
Squirrel.
Squirrel.
So, anyway. Well, happy birthday. Good night.
Yeah, same to you. We're going to have, we'll be back next week. Now, next week, we'll have gotten back from Oshkosh. Actually, you said you may not go this year.
I may. It's still up in the air of whether or not I can make it up there or not. I'm going to try my very best.
Well, for all of our listeners that are Oshkosh, actually on Tuesday, AOPA is having a Flying Club Network panel and breakfast, I think at 8:30 at Oshkosh. So I'm going to go up for that. I've been asked to participate in the panel. I'm excited about that. And I actually have some people have already found out and have asked to meet with me, and I'm excited to meet some of the listeners. And then I'll be up there again on Saturday just kind of tooling around doing the weekend thing. Doing my thing.
Cool. Yeah. We've got a great show next week. David Allen, who's the recent author of a kind of an aviation memoir book, he's going to be with us looking at the week after that. Gentleman named John down in Rome, Georgia. I actually met him at the Cirrus event that I was at. He started up a company that does air shows and hosts air shows and does them right.
Even better.
Yeah. So we were talking about what's the future of the air shows. Here's a guy that's here to fix it.
Actually, I'm interested.
Yeah, definitely.
To hear more.
Cool. Well, anyway, like I said, great show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Make sure to check out our Facebook page, simpleflight.net. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at simpleflightnet. And tweet us throughout the week. If you're up at Oshkosh, take some pictures and send them to us. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, as usual, we wish you very, very strong tailwinds.
And wherever possible, blue skies.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.